Chapter 28. Food, glorious food. Hurrah, hurrah. At last, it was over. I was awash with feelings of relief and self-satisfaction as I'd successfully completed 3 years full-time study at the National Art School, considered one of the best art schools in Australia at the time. I was super excited to roll onto my next social commitment, a second Nairobi Christmas with my father and his second wife, Alison. After Christmas, I'd return to Australia to concentrate on finding a job. In the meantime, I knew there were adventures of all kinds to be had on the other side of the Indian Ocean. On my first visit, I'd sussed out the lay of the land and was determined to make the most of what Nairobi had to offer. Of particular interest were the many skilled Asian tailors in the city, who, for next to nothing, could make anything, including stylish safari suits with masses of flap pockets. At the time, these outfits were the epitome of stylish casual wear for both men and fashion-conscious women. With safari suit dreams uppermost in my mind before I left Sydney, I drew on my mother's textile manufacturing contacts to source lengths of the perfect weight fabric in beige and rust for two outfits, comprising a jacket and long trousers. Now, I was all set. Like last time, the long Sydney to Nairobi journey was broken in Mauritius. This is where all Kenya-bound Qantas passengers spent an idyllic couple of days at a beachside resort, whilst awaiting the connecting BOAC flight from London. So hard to take. When I arrived at Nairobi Airport, I was met by my father and Alison, who I sensed were bracing themselves for another 6 weeks of 24/7, with a passive-aggressive 20-year-old who knew everything. I seamlessly settled back into their household, as the weekly domestic routine hadn't changed since my last visit. I was particularly pleased to return to the privacy of the guest bedroom, with its ensuite bathroom. As burglary was a concern, security was maintained with steel bars on all the windows. Also, both the impressive front door and the double doors to the sleeping wing had a heavy steel bar that was swung into place at night, just before we retired. This was in marked contrast to the home security, or lack of it, I'd experienced in the New Guinea Highlands, where my mother lived. There, the back door was left open at night for the cat to come and go. Here in Nairobi, the gulf between the rich and the poor was undeniable, so resentment of expatriates was thinly disguised. I already knew my fun American friend Mary Jameson was no longer living in Nairobi, because she'd written to say her father had been transferred to Rio de Janeiro, with the Library of Congress. As a result, Jameson's party central was gone. Sad, as Mary and her circle of friends, mostly young Peace Corps volunteers, were great company, as they made the most of their opportunity to spend a couple of years living and working in East Africa. And they all had great stories to tell. Most taught English, as there was an insatiable demand to master the language of Kenya's recently departed colonizers, the British. Sadder still was the news that my special friend Tim Jansen, of Infant Baboon fame, had taken his own life. He'd been studying in Lucerne, Switzerland, and was partway through a medical degree. I'd not kept in regular touch, because I wasn't much of a letter writer. Also, shortly after I returned to Australia to complete my art studies, he'd taken up with the Australian ambassador's daughter, and I didn't want to get in the way. Tim's demise created a pall of sadness that lingered for the remainder of my stay. With all of my American playmates gone, I was thrown back into the company of my father and Alison, though I often managed to escape to the Muthaiga Country Club pool. The pool gave me somewhere to go, and provided a modicum of relief from the underlying hostility that occasionally bubbled to the surface in interactions with my father. Disagreements that Alison managed with dexterity and grace. Socially, things began to look up. My little black cocktail dress came into its own again, and it was deemed suitable to wear to a performance of The Boyfriend at the Donovan Mall Repertory Theatre, the cultural heart of Nairobi. We arrived in time to enjoy a delicious dinner before the show, a first for me, as none of the Sydney theatres I sometimes frequented offered dinner before the performance. At interval, I was introduced to a recently married Sikh couple, Sheila and Rag Mahajan, who, once they were made aware of my deep appreciation of fabric and fashion, invited me to visit their house to see Sheila's wedding saris and jewelry, followed by a Punjabi lunch. I welcomed their invitation with undisguised enthusiasm. The Mahajan's rambling wooden house was in a less posh neighborhood of Nairobi, with mainly Asian residents. Once inside, Sheila's saris didn't disappoint in either quality or quantity. They were completely amazing. Many were traditional, with lots of gold and silver thread embellishment woven at one end and along the selvages. And there was more. Trunks full of psychedelic print saris, all with a matching choli top that were the acme of fashion for Asian women at the time. I gasped involuntarily as each sari length was carefully unfolded, to reveal the exquisite artistry and craftsmanship from the Indian subcontinent. It seemed that each one was more beautiful than the last. I was in heaven, surrounded by exotic textiles. Next, Sheila showed me her exquisitely crafted gold and silver jewelry. Sets of bangles for both wrists and ankles, rings for fingers and toes, earrings, hair and forehead decoration, necklaces, chains linking nose piercing to ear, and the piece de resistance, the waist chain belt, worn over the sari. My mind was blown. I'd never seen so much gold and silver in one place in my life and probably never would again. This collection of jewelry represented serious wealth. I recovered sufficiently to think about lunch. I was surprised to notice I'd worked up an appetite, doing nothing more than unpacking and repacking trunkfuls of saris. Whilst waiting in the living room for lunch to be served, on the mantelpiece above the fireplace, I noticed numerous framed photographs of fierce-looking military men. The Mahajans were obviously a proud military family, as there were photographs of the 52nd Sikh Regiment of the British Indian Army, as well as individual photographs of relatives in uniform. I didn't have to wait for too long before lunch was brought to the table by an elderly Asian woman. It was presented on a thali tray that held a complete meal served in individual bowls. Each bowl containing a small serving of spicy North Indian dishes, plus rice and naan bread. And I ate alone. This was my first brush with Asian dining customs, or a thali meal, or chili. Not long after, Alison came to pick me up. I was in a state of total overwhelm, both artistically and gastronomically, with my mouth remaining slightly numb for some hours afterwards, the result of my first encounter with chili. Not long after my thali experience, I was given yet another unforgettable dining experience. This time, it was a formal dinner party at my father and Alison's house, and I wondered if the Mahajans would be invited. On reflection. Tim Jansen. I wanted to know why Tim decided to take his own life. Did his early childhood experiences in a German orphanage play a part? He never spoke about it. In our conversations, he mostly focused on his numerous, unusual post-adoption adventures. Tim's obvious sensitivity, as evidenced by the adoption and care of the orphaned infant baboon, possibly hinted at needs in his own life? Needs that may not have been met whilst living on his own in Switzerland. But I'd never know. Return hospitality. The Mahajans weren't invited to dinner at my father's house whilst I was staying with him, or afterwards to my knowledge. I'd like to give him the benefit of the doubt, but in Kenya, the societal constraints of colonial social stratification lingered. Maybe their dietary differences were too difficult to deal with? Another snag was that Sikhs don't consume intoxicants, including alcohol. Pre-dinner drinks and numerous matching wines with the meal were de rigueur at my father's table. Or was it that the Mahajans were considered lesser socially? They were undoubtedly richer. I wondered if my father's decision to exclude them was evidence of a lingering racial divide? I didn't have the answers, only the questions. Rag Mahajan. In late 1969, Rag Mahajan came to Sydney to sell rare Makonde carvings he had sourced from Tanzania. He based himself at King's Cross. I took him to see the smash hit musical, Hair, at the Metro Theatre, just around the corner from his hotel. Afterwards he asked me to spend the night with him. What a question. I was lost for words, and left immediately. His wife, Sheila, was my friend. Perhaps the nudity in the musical, and the apparent permissiveness of life in inner city Sydney, prompted him to ask. Facts. The Donovan Mall Theatre, Nairobi, was then owned and run by thespians, Donovan Mall and his wife, Molly. They began performing in 1949, then built a new theatre in 1958. They produced plays and also hosted touring repertory companies performing popular plays from London's West End, as well as short-run operas and ballets. They brought British culture to this far-flung outpost, where many British expatriates craved a connection to home. Asians, people from the Indian subcontinent, in Kenya. Portuguese sailors encountered Asian merchants along the coast of East Africa in the late 15th century. The Uganda Railway linking Uganda's capital Kampala to Mombasa via Nairobi was completed in 1901. It had been built by 32,000 indentured Asian laborers. The railway was the transport link that opened the East African interior to Asian traders. The Mahajans were one of the many Punjabi families that remained, or who chose to migrate to East Africa, to take advantage of the commercial possibilities on offer. Tali. As my interest in food from other cultures developed, I came to understand the Tali meal offers six different flavors. Sweet, salt, bitter, sour, astringent and spicy. A collection of taste sensations on a single plate. Small bowls contained dal, brinjal, potato curry, raita, vegetables, papad, pickle, chutney, most laced with chili, plus a larger bowl of saffron rice and folded chapatis. A feast.